A big World Health Organization study is out finding that 750,000 deaths annually from stroke and heart disease can be attributed to long working hours. A great many people globally are working more than 55 hours a week. One of the study's authors is Dr. Tim Driscoll, Professor of Epidemiology and Occupational Medicine at the University of Sydney. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Jim. Thank you very much for having me.
Nice to talk to you. Working 55 hours or more is a serious health hazard. I saw that line first. How many people do that, do we think, Tim?
Well, I don't know in New Zealand specifically, but across the world, it's nearly 500 million people, it appears.
An obvious question is that these are attributable deaths. There must be many deaths from overwork, non-attributable or at least indirect as well?
The problem with this is that you can't actually count the deaths. It's not like you see somebody who fell off a ladder and you can know that that person died because they fell off a ladder. What we have to do is some epidemiological estimates, and to do those we need to know, well, what proportion of the population are exposed to these long working hours, and what's the increased risk of dying from, in this case we're looking at heart disease, so heart attack or stroke, if you are exposed to the long working hours. What proportion of the deaths from heart attack or the deaths from stroke are due to the long working hours? So when we're saying attributable, it's taking into account sort of the direct and some of the indirect, perhaps not all of them, but some of the indirect ones.
Okay. 194 countries in the study, in other words, all the officially recognised ones pretty much. And in 183 of them, there is a too many hours on the job issue. But the usual suspects, as it were worse off, Tim. It's the sweatshops in Asia, and not just them, but the parts of the world that have traditionally had the most bad press.
We're talking Japan, Singapore, those sort of areas, but also areas in Asia. But as you mentioned, nearly every country across the world has this issue. And certainly, I'm sure you have it in New Zealand. We certainly have it in Australia.
Okay. Who bears the burden most? I don't mean in country terms. I mean of the workers.
It appears to be males more than females. That's not that females that are a lower risk if they work longer working hours, but just males tend to be in the jobs where they're working longer working hours. And also people as they get older more than younger people. But that's also where the burden is. It's the older people who are having the heart attacks, whereas a young person might work the longer working hours, but they're not as much at risk of having a heart attack. And so the longer working hours at that point are less of an issue for them. So working longer hours, even at a younger age, the effect of that can continue for a number of years. And so it's not to say, well, if you're young, it doesn't matter. There are a lot of other potential issues that go along with long working hours, certainly issues of mental health challenges associated with that.
Yeah. Would it be true to say or not, do you think, that in countries like yours and mine, labour laws possibly offer protection in blue-collar jobs, but among professionals and contractors and freelancers, working 55 hours plus may be more epidemic now?
Particularly because the distinction between working hours and home hours has become a lot more fuzzy. You know, increasingly in professional jobs, people are still at their virtual desks when they're at home. It's harder to keep track of it. It's harder for people personally to keep track of how long they're working. It's harder for that to be policed if we were trying to police it. So there is a feeling now that people are always at work. But even in the last 4 or 5 years, my impression is that things have become worse from that point of view. I mean, there are advantages to it too for workers in the flexibility, but there's the danger that one's always at work.
We're talking with Dr. Tim Driscoll, Professor of Epidemiology and Occupational Medicine at the University of Sydney. Standard working hours in the world pretty much are still 35 to 40 hours a week?
Yep.
Okay. And there are protocols, there are country commitments to ensuring maximum limits on work time, but these only go so far in helping, obviously. Is it a kind of needs must when the devil drives in the current working environment? Is that what's going on?
In particular, I think in times of financial uncertainty or other life uncertainty, people become concerned naturally about their work, and they're more likely to work longer hours either because they want to be seen to be more productive or they're worried that their job might be at risk if they're not prepared to work longer. Although our study doesn't cover the last couple of years, you can imagine what the problems with COVID-19 are now bringing in terms of uncertainty of employment.
Yeah.
My feeling is a lot of the push for longer working hours is because it's seen as expected. People feel threatened, so they're prepared to work longer. I think a lot of us don't see the dangers. You know, one might be tired working that long, but the risks associated with it aren't something that's immediate. Again, I mentioned about falling off the ladder. It's if you fall off a ladder and, say, hurt yourself, but not terribly, at least you understand that there are risks associated with that and you might modify your behaviour. But with heart disease and stroke, somebody working like that in their 40s or their 50s, although you can have a heart attack or a stroke in those ages, of course, you're more at risk in the older ages. And so you tend not to think about it at the time that you're doing that work like that.
Yeah. Occupational epidemiologists often sort long working hours into three analytical categories. I was reading in your study, starting at 41 hours, actually. So we don't know how much at risk people are when they work even 45 or 50 hours. We're not quite sure about that.
The analysis compared that highest working group, the greater than 55 hours or more, to 40 hours or less. Between 41 hours and 55 hours, it's not actually clear whether there's an increased risk for that. I mean, logically, you would think the risk would increase as the hours increase.
Yeah.
But the evidence isn't strong enough in those groups to be able to be confident that there is an increased risk with them.
You mentioned that people don't even know how hard or how long they work. How many hours a week do you think you work as an academic? Because I find it hard to calculate for myself. I mean, a version of that probably applies to you.
Definitely, it does apply to me. Yeah. And when I was working, full-time clinically, because I'm medically trained and I used to be working full-time clinically, I can remember as a resident, I had one shift that would start on a Saturday morning and would finish on a Monday afternoon.
Gee.
And fortunately, those sort of things don't continue anymore. But at least then I knew how much I worked. It was a lot, but I knew it because we had to put in timesheets. Whereas as an academic, and I'm sure same with you on radio, you don't put that in. And also, I would work during the day, but look, I might go for a run in the morning, and so I might get to work at 7:30 and do some work, and then I might be able to go for a run for an hour and come back again. So I'm lucky; I've got that flexibility. But I might do 3 hours of work at night.
This isn't a question because I don't think you'll know the answer, but except from an intuitive point of view. But it'd be interesting to speculate or to find out whether that flexibility that you described, you can take it half an hour off here, an hour off there, would ameliorate the problems of working incredibly long hours.
Exactly. I think it's not known, but there's a bit of a hint in that there is evidence that if someone has more control over their job in terms of what they do and when they do it, that there's less stress involved in that. And in terms of, you might wonder, well, why is this happening? Why should long working hours cause problems with heart disease and stroke? And it's probably because there's increased stress involved, and it might not be acute psychological stress, it might just be a raised level of stress in the body, will change the levels of the stress hormones, and it's the stress hormones that can cause damage to the blood vessels, and that's causing the problems with the heart and the brain, giving you a stroke. If one has more control over day-to-day activities, then probably the levels of stress are less. If you were to work 70 hours a week, but you could decide when you worked, I still wouldn't be recommending that.
No. You mentioned the house surgeon's hours, those infamous hours that you had to work when you were a young resident, and we've got those down. But something has happened this century, it seems, to reverse a former downward trend, because we have a new trend in upward hours. Yeah?
You mean in the general workforce?
Yes.
The proportion of people, who are working these longer hours seems to have increased since 2000, which is when we were looking at. It's not huge, but it certainly is going up a little bit. It's increasingly not the case that somebody goes to a fixed workplace, sits down, clocks on, does their job, and clocks off and goes home again.
Yeah.
There's not the clocking on and clocking off.
Other studies, and this one, have suggested an incubation period of at least 10 years for coronary heart disease. So I suppose the question is whether you can reverse your susceptibility by trying to find an easier job somewhere along that 10-year line.
You can modify your risk. Smoking increases, let's say, risk of a whole range of cancers, but definitely lung cancer, but a whole range of cancers, also increases your risk of heart disease. But if you stop smoking, there's no doubt that over time, your risk of both of those things, lung cancer and a whole range of cancers, and heart disease, your increased risk of those decreases over time. So I think it's likely that people's risk can be ameliorated by going back to more normal working hours, but I don't think you could be confident that it would go back to zero.
And I know we've been in the realms of conjecture to a certain extent, but part of this, it seems to me, is that work requirements for people are becoming more complex. They can't get the work they used to get done without bowing to this complexity. Would that be fair? The digital age has, instead of freeing us, in many cases, it's kind of enslaved us more. There's more pressure on for a lot of people, I'm imagining.
Yes, I think so. There's just a general feeling, I think, in society that one needs more, and to get more, one needs more money or needs a good job that will allow that, like the gig economy jobs, where people are having to work long hours to be able to earn enough to make a living. I recently had a trip in a taxi, and I haven't had many because of COVID-19 in the last 18 months, but recently had one, and that taxi driver had is working 7 days a week, 10 hours a day, and that's just what he was doing. And he was doing that because he said, "I want to earn enough so I can get my own taxi."
But gee, the drivers are pretty, as you suggested earlier, they're pretty emphatic in terms of keeping up with society and expectations, of course, out of our hands. Expectations greater for speed of delivery and for access to us as well on our phones and on our text machines. I mean, it's all piling up.
That's very true. The speed of delivery in terms of phones and computers, but there's also speed of delivery, say, with food in the gig economy. We want to be able to ring up and order food and have it delivered in 15 minutes. And that puts a lot of pressure on the people who are delivering that, making that food and delivering that food. So what demands are we putting on workers by wanting things particular ways in our own lives? And it's fine to demand service, no problem with that. But we don't want to put excessive demands on workers because that can affect their health and safety, and that's not appropriate for us to be putting demands on that are doing that.
go down to the pizza parlour and pick up your own pizza. You needn't comment on that. But I would ask you to comment on one last thing. I know it's not your job to find solutions. You have simply pointed out in quite a riveting way the nature of the problem. But there doesn't seem to be an easy solution, because a lot of this sits outside the labour laws that we worked so hard to incept all those years ago. That's the problem here, isn't it?
It's both at the high level, high education jobs, say like yours, but also at the other end where people don't need particular qualifications, say in some of the gig economy jobs, delivering food, let's say. I'm not belittling those jobs, it's just that people don't need a lot of training necessarily for them. There are problems there and there are problems at the other end of the spectrum, and both of them are hard for authorities to keep an eye on. And also we have to keep in mind that a lot of money's been taken out of the occupational health and safety system. So there aren't as many people or resources to be able to enforce this. It's certainly not going to change overnight. But your sort of program and making people aware of it, it is a good first start for that.
Yeah, well, your research. But what you save on occupational health and safety costs now, you will simply spend on hospital costs for strokes and heart disease in the years ahead. That's the obvious comment there, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. But it's always been a case that it's hard to make the case for prevention. Yes. Hard to get dollars into prevention, unfortunately.
It's very good of you to give us your time, actually, to talk about this. It's such an important topic. And Professor Tim Driscoll, thank you very much for it.
My pleasure, Jim. Thank you very much.